We'll start in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. Okay. Shh. Can I have your attention? Let's roll. Top of your hand out says, let's roll. Raise your hand. Where did that phrase become famous? Let's roll.
In the Sunnies.
Who? Who made this phrase famous?
Simpson. Jesus.
Tom D.
His name is? His name? Very good, Joe. Joe said, what'd you say? Todd Beamer, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Who's Todd? Tell us who Todd Beamer is. Very good. Todd Beamer. Let me tell you the story of Todd Beamer. Let me tell you the story of Todd Beamer. You may not have heard of who he is, but Todd Beamer is a really big hero. Todd Beamer was a 32-year-old man who worked for Oracle. He was a salesman. He had a wife, two boys, and his wife was pregnant. He was teaching 11th and 12th grade Sunday school class in his church in Cranberry, New Jersey. And on one morning, Todd was traveling to California. And he got on a plane. This morning was September 11th. While he was on the plane that was supposed to be headed for California, the plane got hijacked by the bad guys. Todd Beamer, as well as several other people on the plane, called from their cell phones to their wives or to their whatever. And while they were there, they found out that one plane ran into the Twin Towers, another one crashed into the Twin Towers, and another one crashed into the Pentagon. So they said, wait a minute, let's put all these pieces together. What's that mean is going to happen to our plane? Well, most likely, probably the same thing is going to happen. So they all got really, really scared. But Todd Beamer, as well as three other guys, decided that they were not going to be like the other planes. Okay? They weren't going to let the same thing happen. Because they had heard on the news that another plane has been hijacked and it was heading straight for Washington, D.C. So Todd Beamer prayed Psalm 32, prayed a prayer to the Lord Jesus Christ, said the words, let's roll, and hung up the phone. And do you know what happened after that?
He died.
He died, as long as everyone else on the plane. But what they did, on the plane, they got the hijackers, they attacked the hijackers, and they managed to steer them off of their route, and instead of that plane, which they said was supposed to be crashing into the White House, it crashed into an open field in Pennsylvania. Everyone died. Todd Beamer is a national hero. Todd Beamer saved thousands and thousands and thousands of people's lives. Don't ask questions without raising your hand. Todd Beamer. Yes, Joe.
How do we know it's him who did it?
Because it was on the phone.
Yeah, but he said that was
cool. Oh, yeah, I know that.
Okay, Joe and Moheb, I'll answer all your questions during free time tonight. Okay? Okay. Todd Beamer saved thousands and thousands of people's lives. Some very important people. Okay? Who knows what would have happened? Yes, Christine.
Can I ask you a question? Isn't that suicide?
No, it's not suicide. Let me finish the story. Todd Beamer saved thousands of people's lives and some very important people. We don't know what was going to happen if that plane had been controlled by the hijackers, where it would have gone into. They said it was going for the White House. Who knows? Todd Beamer was a hero. Yes, he himself died, but he saved lots of people in the meantime. What Todd Beamer did required lots of courage, required lots of faith, and required a very, very strong man to do it. I say Todd Beamer is a hero. Do you agree with me? Okay, good. Now, who is Todd Beamer? Let's investigate who this man is. This guy's going to go down in history, believe me, as a hero, even though Joe and Christine or Moheb may not believe so. Trust me, 99% of the world says this guy is a hero. Okay? He's going to go down as a hero. Now, let's see who Todd Beamer was. Was he like some Navy SEAL guy who had some special training? Was he like a WWE star who was like big and built? No more speaking. No speaking. Was he any of those things? No, he was not. He was an ordinary guy. He never went to anti-terrorism school. He never received Navy SEALs training. He never took a class in how to take down a hijacker plane or anything like that. Maybe at most he saw a Naked Gun or something like that, and that was enough for him to be able to take down. You know, if you've never seen Naked Gun, you wouldn't understand. But that was enough for him to become a hero. What Todd Beamer did that made him a great hero was this. He saw a need, and like I said earlier, he was willing to help. That's it. That's it. He saw a need, and he was willing to do something about it. That made him a hero. Let me ask you a question. Are there needs? Don't answer this question. Okay, this is what's called a hypothetical question. Do not answer. Rhetorical question. Whatever. Okay? This is called a rhetorical question. Do not answer. Are there needs that you see on a day-to-day basis? Are there needs around you?
Yes.
Are there... There's needs all around you. You may not see hijacking planes. You may not see people like in that video. You may not come across people that you can directly cure them from AIDS. You may not be able to fix the problem of homelessness in the world. But there are needs that you come across on a day-to-day basis that you can do something about. There are lonely people that you can befriend them. There are sick people that you can put a smile on their face. There are people who don't have anything to eat that you can give a sandwich to. There's all kinds of needs that you come across on a day-to-day basis. A hero is defined as a person who sees a need and is willing to do something about it. Okay? Yes, Monica.
What was the video
about? We'll tell you about it later. The point is that you know the famous verse in the Bible that says, the harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Alright? That's never been true in history more than it is today. The harvest truly is great. There's lots of needs all around us. It's not that there's a shortage. If we're not doing anything, it's not because there's no need. If I don't do any service, it's not because there's no service needed because I can't find something to do. It's because there's not enough laborers. There's not enough people willing to say, I'm willing to help. So, the whole idea of us being soldiers is that we are here on a mission. We have a job to do. What's the job that we need to do? Well, look at your handout. Mark chapter 12, verse 31 says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. My mission, okay, the first blank on your handout, is to love others. Write it down. My mission is to love others. My mission is to love others. If you look at what Christianity is all about, if you had to define Christianity in one word, love would be a pretty good word. Because look at the next verse in your handout. John chapter 13 verse 35 says, by this all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Jesus said, how are people going to know that you guys are Christians? By your love. Okay, the word Christian, do you know where the word came from? Do you know how people started to be called Christians? Christ didn't say, from now on, you guys are called Christians. And St. Peter never said, okay, now guys, we're the church of Christians. Everyone call each other Christians. Do you know who started the word Christians? Was the Jews. The Jews at the time saw the Christians. After Christ left, they saw this group of people. They were St. Peter, and they were St. Paul, and they were St. James, and all their followers. They said, that group of people is different. They're different than us. Something about them is different. They love each other, and they help each other, and they're kind to each other. Those Christians over there, they're people like Christ. And that's where the word Christian came from. Our mission in life is to love others, and it should be such a strong mission that people should be able to define us by that. And people should be able to know who we are by our love. Okay? Now, if I say love, love is a term, unfortunately, that has gotten tainted in society, and we use the word love too often. You can say I love my pizza, I love my dog, I love God, I love school, I love Abuna Anthony, all this kinds of stuff in the same sentence. But it's different meanings there. Alright? So I'm going to define love for you right now. First thing I'm going to say is that love is a verb. Alright? Love is an action. Love is something that you do. Love is not a feeling. Love is not an emotion. Love is not something that you see in a movie. It's something that you do. Okay, it's an action. It's a verb. Very good. In order for Christ to show us what love was, he told the story of the Good Samaritan. You know the story of the Good Samaritan, right? Story of the Good Samaritan. There's a road from Jerusalem to Jericho. All right, and on that road, there's a guy who got beat up and robbed, and he's lying there. So what happened is three different guys walk by. And those three different guys represent the three different attitudes or responses that me and you have, or that people in general have, to seeing people in need. All right? So I was hoping we could read it. Do you guys have Bibles?
Yeah.
Go to Luke chapter... You don't have Bibles? Share. Luke chapter 10. Luke 10.
What verse?
Oh, I'm getting better.
Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 25. The reference is on your handout. Luke 25. Luke 10, 25. Okay, let's start reading together. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Good question. Someone says, tell me about how do I get to heaven? Christ answers. He said to him, what is written in the law? What is your reading of it? So he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. I'm sorry, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, you have answered rightly. Do this and you will live. But he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, who is my neighbor? Okay, this is the part that's important. And Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road. And when he saw him, he passed on the other side. All right, let's stop there. Okay? First, a priest walks by, and he passes him on the other side. The first attitude, okay, the first blank on your handout, is the keep my distance attitude. All right? Keep my distance attitude. Or avoidance, okay? Avoidance. This is like what it says. Keep my distance. Don't get too close. Don't get too involved. Keep things kind of at arm's length. This is very, very easy to do living in Northern Virginia, okay? You can hear about all the kinds of problems in the world, and you don't want to get too close, all right? You can see people in need maybe in your school, and maybe you say, okay, you know, this kid, you know, kind of needs a lift up, so maybe I'll say hi, but I don't want to get too close. I don't want to get too involved. I want to kind of stay on the other side of the road. The next attitude, go to verse 32. The second guy says, likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. The next one is curious but uninvolved. Curious but uninvolved. Which is first, one or two?
One.
Wrong. This one's much worse. Okay? Why? Because the other guy saw it from a distance, kept on walking. This guy came right up to it, looked at it, said, whoa, I don't want to be anywhere near that. And he kept on, and he crossed to the other side. Alright? First of all, the first one, this is, it says a Levite. Everyone know what a Levite is? We're talking about, not jeans here, we're talking about the holy people, right? Tribe of Levi, very good. Alright? He's supposed to be like the priest, or like the servants of God. The Levite, like I said, comes across, sees him half dead, sees him about lying there, and crosses back to the other side. Now, before we sit here and say, oh, this guy's terrible. Before we sit here and judge the Levite, saying, oh, how cruel, we would never do that, let me ask you a question. Especially for you juniors and seniors who drive. Okay? When you're driving down the road, and you see an accident on the other side, what's the first thing you do? Stare and drive on by, right? Now, you don't agree that you do that? You don't do that? Shh. I'm not telling you to get out of your car and help them. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, that's typical human nature. There's a problem over there. Look at it. Ooh, that must be bad. Keep on going. Okay? That's typical human nature whenever there's a problem. Okay? The third... Yes, Danny.
The situation with the cars, I mean, at least you see somebody helping. But whereas when the Levite walked by, he saw nobody was helping him, and he just walked by.
Right, okay? As Danny's saying, we kind of do stuff like that all the time, all right? So don't judge this guy too quickly. The third attitude. Yes, Samantha.
But what can you do to help? Like, if we saw an accident, what can you do?
Yeah, you can help the person who's crying.
Okay? We're going to get to that. Let's leave that for a second, okay? Let's leave that for a second. Let's get to the third one. The third one is verse 33. The story goes on. It says, "But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him." All right, let's stop there. The third attitude, which is what we want, is treat others how I want to be treated. The golden rule. Treat others as I want to be treated. Okay? This, treat others how I want to be treated. Golden rule. Okay? And this is what we're going to see. I'm going to get to your question, Samantha. But we're going to cover it in a little bit. We'll start at the beginning here. That's what we're going to try to see today. How we can develop this lifestyle of loving others as we want to be loved. This lifestyle of a good Samaritan. Practically. Because like you said, if there's a car accident on the side, what can I do? What am I supposed to do? All right? So we're going to see four easy steps that you can be like the good Samaritan. And it's all going to be from this story in the Bible. The first thing that you can do, number one on your handout, is see the needs of people around me. Okay, step one is see the needs of people around me. We're talking here about how to be kind. Kind acts always begin with your eyes. Always begin with what you see, with your vision. I'm telling you that you have to be aware. First thing you have to do is start to see the needs around you. And most of us are not trained to do that. We're not able to see what's going on around us. Look at verse 33. Okay? The good Samaritan, what's the first thing? A certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. And when he saw him, alright? When he saw him, he had compassion. The first step is that he had to see him. If you want to be a kind person, and you want to be a loving person, then you have to change the way you see the world. Alright? You have to change the way you look at things. The way we usually look at things is through, like I said earlier today, is through a selfish eye. Okay? Selfishness is when you look at yourself. Alright? The only way to start seeing the needs, if Maggie, there's something wrong with Maggie, the only way I can see the needs of Maggie is if I take my eyes off myself and I look at her. Okay? I have to stop thinking, well, how's my hair? And how do I feel? And how do I look in front of people? And all this kind of stuff. And I have to look at other people. Alright? That's the only way to get the sensitive eye. And it makes sense. If you want to cross the street, you have to look where? Straight ahead, or both ways, yeah. You can't look down. Both ways, straight ahead, every way. Point is, you can't look at yourself. You can't be looking down like this and just cross the road. All right? You have to look around. You have to see what's going on around you. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24 on your handout. St. Paul says, "Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being." You need to be on the lookout around you. Who around you is hurting? Emotionally, relationally, spiritually? Who around you is in need? Okay? You may not all be in Africa to serve the needs of the people with AIDS, but there are people around you that are hurting and that need your help. Now, some people would say, well, this is one of those things that just kind of, I'm not a sensitive person. And if anyone's going to say I'm not a sensitive person, I'm going to be the first one to raise my hand. All right? Sometimes I think that God gave me kind of like sensitive ADD kind of a thing. All right? Where I may not be the most sensitive person. All right? Oftentimes I've found that someone could be upset at me without me even knowing it. Okay? Maybe I walked by and didn't say hi, or maybe I whatever, and I may not even know it. So does that give me an excuse to be insensitive? You know, I'm not good at sensitivity. Can I say that? Okay, I'm not good at it. So I'm going to be insensitive the rest of my life? Absolutely not. That means it's something I need to work on. So there's no such thing as being insensitive and not working on it. So rate yourself right now. You see at the bottom of every point, there's a rating. So I want you to give yourself a sensitivity rating. 1 means you need a lot of work. 5 means you're perfect. Before you rate yourself on sensitivity, before you rate yourself here, let me ask you a question. Before you give yourself that perfect 5 in that you always see the needs around you and you are always in tune with what other people need, ask yourself, how would your mom rate you? Or how would your dad rate you? Or how would your sister rate you? Or how would your friends rate you on being able to see the needs? Ask yourself the following question. Okay? Think about, like, all the people that you see on a day-to-day basis. Think about, like, 10 people right now in your head. And name for each of those 10 people in your head only, what is their number one struggle right now? Or what is the number one issue that they're dealing with in life? You do not have to write this down. But the point is... I wouldn't have said that yesterday. Oh. Me and Abuna is in touch, man. What else did Abuna say yesterday? He said all this? He did?
No? Yeah. You need to charge or put like the name of the...
He said Captain Riley Fargo, so I can never call
him. Oh, no, no, no. Yes, Monica. Okay, right now, Monica said, is it possible to be too sensitive? I'm not talking about sensitive for myself. No, I'm talking about sensitive for needs of others.
I'm sensitive for even for needs of others. Like, that way, like, I think, I don't know, like we learned before, like, if you get too involved in something, you might not be strong enough to hold it.
Okay, well, we didn't get to involved yet. Right now, we're just talking about sensitivity, which means being able to see the needs around you.
Awareness.
Okay, or awareness. We didn't get to get involved here. We're gonna go through the steps, okay? So number one, you need to be able to see the needs. After you can see the needs, what's the next thing?
Relate.
No, is that you sympathize with people's pain. Sympathize. Relate is close. Whoever said relate, that's close. If I just see the needs around me and stop there, then I'm like the Levite. Okay, I came, I saw, and I walked aside. So we can't just stop there. Look at verse 33. Actually, it's on your handout. It's on your handout. When he saw him, he had compassion. When he saw him, he had compassion. So step one was see, step two is compassion. Step one is the eyes, step two is the heart. Okay, the heart kicks in now. How do I become more sympathetic? That's the million-dollar question here. Okay? I'll tell you the secret to sympathy. It's in one thing. The secret to sensitivity was in your eyes. The secret to sympathy is in your ears. Means you need to be able to listen. Okay? That's the secret here. Is you need to take time to listen. The more you're good at listening, the more sympathetic you'll be. And the more you'll be able to care for people's pains. There was an ad in the paper. Okay? True story. I read it on the internet. The ad was, I'll listen to anybody talk about anything for 15 minutes for $20. I'll listen to anyone talk about anything for 15 minutes for $20. I guarantee this guy made a ton of money. Because you know what people want in life? People don't want advice. You can get advice for free from Dear Abby or from any one of those newspaper columns or anything like that. What people want is someone to just listen. And you know how I can prove it? That's why chat rooms are so popular. You know why chat rooms are so popular? Because it's a chance for me to go and I think 15 people are listening to me. Or I think that someone out there, and it could be no one on the other side, but it makes me feel good just to think that there's someone called P. Tedros on the other side that's listening to me. All right? Someone that cares about me. All right? People don't want advice. People just want encouragement. All right? Look on your handout. There's a quote at the bottom there. This is an anonymous quote from a high school student after a disaster had happened in their life. Okay? It says, I was sitting, torn by grief and misery, and a church servant came by and talked to me about how God is all wise, how much he loves me, and why I should still have hope. He talked constantly. He said things I knew were true, but I didn't care. The only thing I cared about was him going away, and he finally did. Then another servant came and sat beside me, and he didn't talk at all. He didn't ask me any funny questions. He just sat beside me for an hour or more, listened when I said something, answered briefly, prayed simply, and left. I was moved. I was comforted. I hated to see him go. People don't want advice. People just want encouragement. They just want sympathy, and that comes by listening. Okay? If you look at the next verse on your handout, 2 Corinthians chapter 2, or chapter 1 verse 4, Why does God allow us to go through tough times so that we can be able to give others help? It says, God comforts us in all our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. Okay? So rate yourself on this one. How good am I at sympathy? How good am I at listening? Those two are pretty tough. All right? The first two steps. The third step is to seize the moment. Seize the moment. Carpe diem. Very good, but not quite. Look at verse 34. It's on your handout. It wasn't enough that he just saw and had compassion. Then he had to take action, okay? This is to do something about it. It says, so when he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. It's not enough just to feel sorry for the guy. But look what it says, is that he went to him and bandaged his wounds. He rolled up his sleeves, he got down on his hands and knees, and he started to do something about it, okay? He wasn't scared to get his fingernails dirty. He wasn't scared to put a little sweat into it. He did whatever it had to take. Okay, look what it says here. It says that he dressed him. He poured on oil and wine. Why did he put oil and wine on? Why? Is this some magical, like, is this something that's going to, is this like some medical thing that we don't know about, oil and wine? You guys are thinking way, 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 way too much. Why did he put oil and wine on? Because that's all he had. He wasn't a doctor. He didn't have a first aid kit. He didn't have any kind of medical supplies. He had two things with him. He had oil and he had wine. He poured them on him. And then what next? Look what it says next. He set him on his own animal, brought him to... Oh, right before that, I'm sorry. He bandaged his wounds. What do you think he bandaged him with his wounds? His own clothes. Like I said, he didn't have a kit. He took his shirt sleeve, like, ripped it off, and tied it up around him. And maybe he took his sock off and put it around the guy's feet because the guy had cold feet or whatever. The point is that he did whatever it took. He didn't wait around and say, okay, I got to call 911, and I got to try to, you know, get a medical encyclopedia and see what to do here. He ripped off his own shirt to be able to do it. Look at Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27 and 28. It says, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due. It is in the power of your hand to do so. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back tomorrow. I will give it when you have it with you. We read that earlier. Same principle applies here. That we need to seize the moment. All right. When God, here's the important thing. When someone has a need and they're right in front of you, God sent them at that specific time and sent you in that specific time so that you could fix it. Alright? So you must seize the moment to be kind as soon as it comes up. Don't wait for better conditions. Now, in order to do that, like I said earlier, you must be willing to be interrupted. Okay, remember how we talked about before how service always is an interruption. It's never something that happens on your own schedule. Let's look at the Good Samaritan. What kinds of excuses could the Good Samaritan have given not to do this kind act? He could have given lots of excuses. He could have said, you know, I'm on my way to dinner at mom's house and, you know, mom is waiting. He could have said, you know, I got finals to study for. He could have said, you know, I got a headache. He could have said, I'm feeling... He could have came up with a million different excuses. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's another thing, is that Samaritans and Jews were not supposed to be friends. The point is that there's always going to be excuses. Don't make them. If you make them, then what do you become like? Who made excuses in the story? The priest and the Levite. All right, and those are the two ones that we don't want to be like them. Okay? Understand that God brings people into your life at a specific time and puts you there at a specific time for a reason. The other thing that you have to understand is that in order to be kind, you have to be willing to take some risks. Okay? You have to be willing to take some risks. Did the Samaritan here take any risks?
Yeah.
What risk?
He could have froze to death.
Okay, very good. The fact that the guy got beat up and robbed means that what? Means there's beat-uppers and robbers somewhere in the nearby area. Alright? It means that this is not a safe place to be. It means that, like someone said, is that the Jews and Samaritans are not friends. He could have thought in his head, well, wait a minute, what if this guy's a decoy, and as soon as I go to help him, they're going to jump me. Now, I'm not going to help this sucker. I'm not going to be the sucker. He could have came up with a million different excuses. All right? But the point is that he didn't do that. Okay? So rate yourself on this too. How good are you at being kind when the opportunity presents itself? The last step in kindness, now to be loving and kind, is spend whatever it takes. Spend whatever it takes. There's always a cost to everything you do in life. Three with C's. There's always a cost to everything you do in life. Anytime you do one thing, means you're giving up doing something else. What was the cost to this guy right here? Well, go to verse, it's on your handout. 34 and 35. Again, so he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. He set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii. He gave them to the innkeeper and said to him, take care of him, and whatever you spend, when I come again, I will repay you. First of all, there's the physical cost here, which he spent 2 denarii. How much is 2 denarii? Well, that was approximately 2 months' wages. Alright? So that's 2 months' paycheck. Alright? 2 months' paycheck that he gave. And not only that, that's nothing. What did he do? He took him to the inn, he paid, then what did he leave with the innkeeper? He left his credit card. He said, here's my credit card. Any other expenses that come up, just charge my card. See what it says there? Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I come again, I'll repay you. Saying, spend as much as you want. Take care of this guy. It's on me. What did he gain from spending all this money?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's what we're talking about here. Kindness, acts of loving other people, is when you give, when you spend, and you get nothing back in return. Or do you? Why would I tell you that's not a good transaction? Spend a lot and get nothing back? Why would I tell you to do that? I wouldn't tell myself to do that. Why would I tell you to do that? Well, you do get something back. You get something back. Very good. Satisfaction, but even more than that. All right. According to the Bible, if you believe what the Bible says, the Bible is very clear from cover to cover that if you love other people and if you're kind to other people, then God is very, very kind to you and God takes care of you. So which is better? For me to take care of people, have God take care of me, or me to just take care of myself? Who's going to do a better job of taking care of me? Me or myself, or me or God? God's going to do a much better job. Look at the last verse on your handout. Isaiah 58, 10 and 11. If you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light shall dawn in the darkness. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought. You shall be like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. You take care of people, I take care of you, is what God says. Hey, to me, that's a really good deal. What I'm trying to tell you is, God, just like this Good Samaritan, God uses Good Samaritan as an example of someone that we should be like. This guy didn't change the world. This guy didn't solve all the homeless problem. This guy didn't, you know, cure AIDS or cancer or anything like that. He helped one guy. That's all he did, was just help one guy. And you know what? That's what God wants from me and you too. God isn't expecting you to cure the world of cancer. Alright? God, hope, maybe he is, I don't know, but I'm saying, in general, God doesn't say that you have to be a priest or a monk or a nun or you have to solve all the homeless problem. God only wants you to do whatever's right in front of you. Okay? Todd Beamer was a guy who did whatever was right in front of him, he's a hero. The Good Samaritan helped one guy and he's a hero. You can do the same thing. Okay? You guys can be heroes just by seeing the need that's in front of you, by sympathizing, by seizing the moment, and spending whatever it takes in order to be kind. Okay? Anyone have any questions?
Glory be to God forever.